Off the ball, rugby.
You know, if it's like a similar fixture to the one we just saw in Scotland, where it's 50 points to 40, and we've played well for the majority of it, but our defence has been a shambles, and they somehow outscore us. I don't think it's the end of the world, but I don't think we're going to lose to Scotland.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Now Di Stefano. There's always tenor when he moves.
From the barrios of Buenos Aires to the roaring nights of Madrid, this episode traces the extraordinary journey of Alfredo Di Stefano, the visionary who redefined modern football. Born in Argentina, forged in the breakaway leagues of Colombia with Millonarios, and immortalized in Spain, he became the heartbeat of a dynasty. But what if the man they called La Saeta Rubia had taken a different path and gone to Real Madrid's biggest rivals, Barcelona? Find out on episode 6 of Richie McCormack's Sliding Doors podcast as to how European football could have been changed as we know it. Coming to you this Monday in your OTB football podcast feed for free.
Football on Off the Ball.
This is a very arrogant English Premier League approach which you've been sucked into, that we can immediately play chess with other people's chessboards. And Ferencváros, I think, might have a word to say about that.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Racing Pod
on Off the Ball
with William Hill. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.
You're welcome back. John Duggan is with us on the line after a dramatic day two at the Cheltenham Festival. John, how are you doing?
Good, Owen. Good evening. How are you?
All good. As many of these slots tend to go, there's only one place to start, and that is with Willie Mullins. Three winners for him today, himself and Paul Townend, going back to back in consecutive days with the feature races, the championship races at Cheltenham.
Yes, we'll just maybe get through the routine stuff. And that's really, in a way, kind of bit unfair on Willie Mullins and Paul Townend for their brilliance, as I described him on last night's show, a genius, but because there is a controversy we need to get to in a moment, but we'll just go through the matters on the pitch, as it were. So Willie Mullins now at 118 winners, two yesterday and three today. King Rasco Gray at 11-1 won the opening race, the Turner's Novice Hurdle. Paul Townend getting to 40 winners with that one. Only the fifth run of his life, swinging impressively, turning for home, and had the stamina up the hill to beat Active Innocence. And he's a very good horse, King Rasco Gray. I think for the future, you want to be following him in the colours of Galopin des Champs. And then his second winner was Kits Boohill, who jumped brilliantly off the good ground for Harry Cobden. Both of these horses, 11-1 in the market. And that was in the Brown Advisory Novices Chase. And Final Demand, another Willie Mullins horse, was narrowly beaten into second. A couple of the favourites, No Drama This End and Romeo Coolio, pulled up in the first two races. And then Elite Detance won the big one, the Queen Mother Champion Chase. I was kind of, in a moment, I just kind of felt people around me. And the reason I realised is that the Queen actually walked past me, Queen Camilla at Cheltenham today. But a 5-2 winner, Elite Etance, in the Queen Mother Champion Chase. A six-time Grade 1 winner before today, this Grey, had won one of the key trials, the Tingle Creek Chase. So if Majber, the favourite, didn't perform, and he didn't, then Elite Etance was very much a contender who could pick up the pieces. Majber made about three mistakes. His race was pretty much run. We knew early enough, and he finished seventh. He trailed home in seventh, which is very disappointing for connections. But Elite Detance to the same stable, one for Paul Townend and Willie Mullins. And Willie, after the race and after the day, spoke to me and congratulated Paul Townend for his ride on Elite Detance.
Yes, he did. But I thought Paul was a huge factor in on him. You know, I'm looking at Elite Detance not able to keep up in the first mile. And I said, they must be going too fast. And I could see it going through Paul's head that he thought, you know, if Elite Detance can't keep up, they're going too fast. And sure enough, you know, Majbro in front made a mistake and then made another mistake, and it changed the whole complexion of the race. So when Paul turned at the top of the hill to come down the hill, I could see him gathering his fellow together and trying to pick his spot over the last three fences and then picky spot going around the last bend and just jumped the last two. You could see Paul's body language telling us all that he had plenty in the tank, just needed to negotiate the last two. He gave me a heart attack at the last, but apart from that, he was going as well as he looked, appeared to be going, yes.
That's the chat.
I'd say the rider's winner rather than the horse's winner.
That's the champion chase, and you also had King Rascal Grey in the first. Not many runs in his life, only his fifth run, and he looks a real horse for the future.
Yes, but I thought after Leopardstown to finish third to the two horses in that top class 2 mile race, and I was thinking Supreme Novice Hurdle, and so when we dropped him back to the Turners extra 5 furlongs, I thought, wow, this fellow's in here with a real chance. And what's killing me more than anything else is that I didn't tip him to any of my pals because I thought he'd be much shorter. What really surprised me is that he was 11 to 1 after the race. I thought he'd be nearly favoured. You know, to me, knowing how unfit he looked in Leopardstown, I think I was quoted on television as saying he looked like a brood mare in Leopardstown, and he was still able to finish third behind those two horses. I thought, you know, he'll improve, that run will bring him on, which it did. He looks a real star of the future.
Kits Buhel was so impressive at Kempton at Christmas, and he just jumped for fun in that good ground.
Yeah, Kits Buhel is... he had an off day. And we don't know really what happened to him that day, but he was dead as a doornail in the parade ring before the race and going to the start. Paul said he didn't want to go down to the start or everything. So whether something happened to him travelling or not, we don't know. Anyhow, he freshened up when he came home. That was our main job because we knew he was fit enough just to get him freshened up. He freshened up here today. Harry popped him out in front and jumped from fence to fence like he did in Kempton. And, I thought he was beaten by Final Demand over the last. I thought Final Demand was coming to beat him. And he stuck his head out, threw in a tremendous jump of the last and fought the whole way up the hill. So that was tremendous in itself. But also the fact that Final Demand came back and was more like the racehorse he should be. That was, you know, nearly two winners in the one race for me.
Yes, well done on that. And you've got a champion hurdle, a champion chase. The week is going very well, Willie. The Stairs hurdle tomorrow.
Yeah, Ballyburn has, you know, he's a lot of improving to do. He's a lot of little hardships to get over. But I will say he is in much better form. And I'd rather we had more rain. I don't know if this rain that was forecast is going to come at all until Friday, which might be a bit late for me. But he's in good order other than that. And the Ryanair Factor File, I'm hoping he does his stuff. What more can I say about him? He was awesome around here last year. If he could be anything like that this year, he has a great chance.
Congratulations, Willie. Enjoy the night.
Thank you very much, John.
Willie Mullins speaking to John Duggan there at Cheltenham earlier. It's just gone full time in the game between Bayer Leverkusen and Arsenal. Arsenal have found an equaliser at half time in this tie, so to speak. Kai Havertz with a penalty. Nani Madueke, who came on for Kai Havertz after an hour, has made a real difference this evening for Arsenal. He gets fouled, it's given as a foul inside the Leverkusen box, but people will have their own opinions on this, and I suspect a lot of people will think it was a very, very soft decision indeed. Obviously, VAR is involved, but after a VAR check, the decision is made to continue to go with the penalty. Kai Havertz steps up and drills it to the bottom left corner. So 1-1 going back to the Emirates Stadium next Tuesday. John, when it comes to the controversy on the course today, Declan Queeley, Nico de Boinville, talk to us. What happened here?
Well, I went down to the last hurdle for the opening race, this Turners Novices hurdle at Owen, and I was right beside the horses. And people don't really, can see on television. They don't get a full picture on TV how big these horses are. They weigh half a ton. They're big beasts, right? And they go really, really fast. They go at 30 miles an hour. So these animals take managing. You've got big fields. You had 22 runners for this Turners Novices hurdle. Declan Queeley, the Waterford amateur, had I'll Sort That was his mount, and Active Innocence was the mount of Nico de Boinville. It's usually competitive. So they walk in for the starts here. And they don't want this thing where you just raise a flag and it's hell for leather. It's a tight track. They want them to walk in and kind of have an orderly procession to the start. But the seems to be a bit of a disconnect between the starter and the jockeys, and it's leading to tensions. And therefore, there's a lot of jostling for position. And it all boiled over between Declan Keighley and Nico de Boinville. So there were verbals at the start. De Boinville wasn't very happy with Queeley's position or the way he was, you know, presenting his horse for the start. But then, and you think, okay, well, this happens all the time. But then Queeley came in and told ITV's Matt Chapman that he was abused, and he said it was horrific. And De Boinville, on his return to the weigh room, was asked about this by ITV, and he said that maybe Queeley needed to look in the mirror. I was thinking to myself, you know what, this is spicy. This is a bit of an interesting story on a quiet day relative to maybe the Gold Cup day. And as part of sport, and look, you know, on all sports, we have verbals sometimes, and sometimes people do go over the top and say things that are unacceptable. And it is bizarre here, Owen, as well, that you have the competitors in the sport going back to share the same dressing room. So it is a strange sport in that regard.
Yeah.
But what's happened now is that you've had now an escalation of the story, because the Racing Post is the trade newspaper. It pretty much is the, I suppose, the main source of information for horse racing. They're now reporting that an allegation of racial abuse by Nico De Boinville has been lodged with the stewards. And Queeley has talked to the Racing Post. I'm going to quote what he said here now. I was boxing from my position down the inside, and there was a lot of general bunching going on. It was competitive down there, and I got repeated racial abuse from Nico De Boinville when I was coming in around the corner, and then he called me an effing P and a couple of times in front of the ITV camera. I didn't talk back to him. Thankfully, I didn't open my mouth. He tried to single me out. I was as if I was the one causing the hassle. When he was shouting, he was picking on me when trying to hold his position. Now, the steward's report reads, an inquiry was held into a complaint received from Mr. D. Queeley regarding the incident at the start. The stewards, having heard the initial evidence from Queeley and Nico De Boinville, have adjourned the matter to obtain further evidence. Queeley was suspended for one day from his conduct at the start. I don't think that really relates to what we're talking about here. That's more in relation to the way they lined up. Nico De Boinville has yet to respond to Queeley's allegation, which is very serious now. I've been coming here 24 years, Owen. I never remember anything like this, an allegation of racial abuse between jockeys. Obviously, with all dressing rooms, there's a degree of sanctity, and there's a degree of what happens in Vegas, stays in Vegas with dressing rooms. But I've never heard anything like this in 24 years of coming here, an allegation of racial abuse from one jockey to another.
It's extraordinary. Just to rewind a little bit and to give a greater flavour of what actually happened, because I'm conscious people would have been at work, maybe weren't, maybe had the coverage on mute. Let's get a sense of what the two jockeys said, first of all, as you say, speaking to Matt Chapman on the ITV.
Is Declan Quilly rode our sort that? Declan, you'd be pleased with that, yeah?
Yeah, he ran well. The start was a bit of a miss. Got tracked back further than I wanted. All right.
Quickly, on those starts, how frustrating is it for you jockeys?
Being abused by an English rider, Nico De Boinville, not very nice. I'm an amateur. Coming over here, riding in front of my kids, and horrific.
Nico De Boinville, second on Act of Innocence. Nico, you'll be pleased, yeah?
Yeah, very happy.
Frustrated?
A bit frustrated. A few things went all against us, but I'm happy in the main.
Yeah. Declan Quilly just said the start was a bit iffy. Did you feel it was a bit iffy?
Maybe he should look in the mirror.
Yeah, so let's have a listen then to what the analysis was from AP McCoy and from Ruby Walsh, also on the ITV.
Let's watch carefully, okay? So Declan Quilly, you saw his colours there. Let's have a closer look, and those checked yellow, there he is, yellow and green.
You can see Nico saying something here.
The only thing I would say about this is, right, one person has much right to be there as someone else.
I totally agree with you.
So
I totally
just because whoever you are doesn't mean they say you should be in there.
So Declan Quilley's, he's an amateur. Has he not done a whole lot wrong there?
I don't think so. No, Am I wrong, Luke?
Look, you can line up. It's not a golden... Just because you're a better jockey, bigger jockey, you know, you like to go down the inner. But if I got to the inner before you, I'd stay there. Why shouldn't he go down the inner if he wants to?
I don't know. Looking at from that shot, I don't think one person is any more entitled to be there as another. So,
Ruby, you're watching that. What do you make of it?
It's just all great fun and games, isn't it? But I think that's the same Nico De Boinville or John Bond last year and put his head on the tape. So maybe he needs to look in the mirror too. But look, I do think, Ed, that you need a rolling start. I've said it for a long time. But if the horses walked out and lined up behind the tape that then moved in front of the horses, you'd have none of this drama.
John, let's maybe leave the racism allegations to one side at the moment, because that process is going to play out and there's only so much we can say about that. I actually find this separately a really interesting conversation. As somebody who's constantly watching the sport week in, week out, how big a talking point has this been coming into the festival, the starts in these National Hunt races and the chaos that often ensues?
Well, I mean, if you look at the Racing Post in February, Liam Otters had the Racing Rider of the Year, wrote a big feature article on it. He says it was a bloody nonsense in 2025. So how can the 2026 Cheltenham Festival avoid more false starts and frayed tempers? Look, I think there's various things at play here. I think the fact that the course is so tight, it is Cheltenham, it is by far the biggest festival of the season. I spoke to Declan Queeley actually at Nace last week. I mean, he's been dreaming of a Cheltenham winner all his life, right? He's Tom Queeley's brother, the former jockey of Frankel. His dad is involved in the training operation. He's bringing three horses here on the boat with hopes. He's riding the horse himself. When I saw him come through the chute after the race, he looked absolutely shattered. The physical exertions, as I'm trying to explain to you on the television, you just do not see the physical exertions involved in getting a horse. So you're going over 2.5 miles on a horse, and obviously all this stuff had happened beforehand. So I think for most people who follow racing, it's an inconvenience, it's an annoyance. Oh, will you just get on with it? Generally, when I go racing in Ireland, the white flag is raised and they're off. And you don't really have these elongated starts, but they want them to walk in here. And it just feels like with so many big fields, with a lot of tension, and with a lot of jostling for position. I mean, if you look at the races today, the race that Jingo Blue won, the race that the Morn Rambler won, you had to be in the front, on that good ground, at a turning tight track, you need to be in the front rank. And that is causing issues with the jockeys and with the tension. But I do think that there's frustration, and look, they need to find a better solution around the start. But I think this has just gone to a completely different level now. Given what one jockey said about another. I know you don't elaborate on it too much, but I think that has taken this story into a completely different place.
Yeah.
Because to me, if it starts, there's a start, or if there's not a start, okay. But this has now gone to a different place.
No, you're right. Just one other point of curiosity there, John. Like, the differences between the starts in Irish National Hunt versus British National Hunt, I hadn't quite realised, I must say, that there was a big difference between them. But clearly there is a cultural divide here in terms of Irish riders going over to Cheltenham, and British jockeys, even British part owners and trainers suggesting that the mix of different starting, of how they're used to different starts, is affecting things.
Well, Nicole de Boinville in an article in February said this, right, and I'm quoting here from the Racing Post: "We're racing all the time, and we're trying to protect the sport. The problem is an amalgamation of some of the Irish lads coming in and the amateurs who, and there's no way, other way of putting this, just don't care. The starts normally work well, and we're now all working together, but we can only keep a lid on it so much. The procedures we have are fine, but they require everyone to work together. I don't think you can do that unless you increase the bands. That would make a difference." This was Nico de Boinville quoted last month.
Is that fair, John? Does he have a point?
Look, I think that all of these people with points around the start, everybody's got a point around the start. But I think that, look, if this allegation, if these verbals hadn't happened today, it would not be an issue. It would not be a story. You could have false starts tomorrow, tensions tomorrow, and it would just be another story. But I don't think, I think, as I said, what has been alleged here is now taking the story into a completely different space. And that's why we're talking about it. We wouldn't be talking about it if there was just a bit of verbals, to be honest.
Okay.
And Matt Chapman did a great job in getting the jockeys to open up, and Declan Queeley did open up.
Yeah. Yeah. He looked beyond upset, to say the least, when he was coming in speaking to Matt Chapman. Listen, let's move on to a couple of first festival winners. Colin Keane, Conor Stone Walsh, good days for them.
Yeah. I mean, Conor Stone Walsh, he's a Wexford jockey, young jockey. He had final orders at 7-1, was the winner of the cross country chase for trainer Gavin Cromwell. We'll hear from him in a moment, but it was also a memorable day for me. It's Colin Keane. He's better known as a flat jockey. He's a 6-time Irish champion flat jockey, a former Irish Derby winner. So he's won the biggest race in Ireland in flat racing. And now he can add a Cheltenham winner to his CV. So the bumper is the only race here without obstacles. Essentially, it's a flat race over 2 miles for jumps horses. And trainer Noel Mead asked Keane to ride a horse called the Morn Rambler. They won for Dan Patrick owner Phil Potty. And there was Dan Scarves in the winner's enclosure, and a tremendous celebrations. Great, great raucous celebrations as Keane draped the tricolour over his shoulders. And I caught up with him after the race. Colin Keane, a Cheltenham Festival winner, that is some buzz, I would say.
Yeah, it's not something I would have expected to have on the CV. So even to ride here would have been amazing, but to ride a winner is brilliant.
Talk to us about the plan, because Noel Mead asked you to ride this horse in the bumper. How did it all come about for you?
Yeah, it was very much Noel Mead's plan, and I just jumped on the bandwagon. He asked me a few weeks ago when I was in the dock, would I be interested in riding in the bumper? I said, of course I would. Went away and got my license sorted, and the rest is history, I suppose.
It's a flat race. Is it different to a flat race that you'd ride, though, on the level?
It's probably a mixture of both. It feels something like Galway, the Topaz Mile in Galway, and the Irish is Arwich. A lot of runners, not much room up and down.
Did you feel confident during the race? You're in a good position and that you thought this horse might have something for you, the Mourne Rambler.
I jumped off. I was happy where I jumped off, but the further we went, the more he struggled, to be honest. So I kind of had to give him a chance, but I was trying to keep looking around to see which lads were around me, and I was happy enough Patrick was close enough to me, Keith was beside me, and when I got onto their tails kind of coming down the hill, he started getting into a rhythm and coming forward, and the horse in front kind of started stopping, but from when we turned in and we got a bit of room, I thought he picked up well the whole way from there to the line.
The tricolour's back.
The tricolours are back, thank God.
And just to finish, Colin, and you've ridden an Irish Derby winner, you've went to the Breeders' Cup and won there. How does this compare, a Cheltenham Festival winner, your first one?
Yeah, first. It's definitely up there. It's something that I didn't think was possible, or I would ever get the opportunity to do. So I hadn't put much thought into it. So it's very much a tick off the bucket list.
Colin Keane, congratulations! Thanks for speaking to Off the Ball here on News Talk.
Thank you.
Yeah, great stuff there from Colin Keane. On to Conor Stone Walsh here. Then talk to us about his day, John. And I know we're going to hear from him in just a moment.
Well, I mean, he was a young jockey that turned up at the nice racetrack last Sunday and rode a horse called the Lovely Man to win the Leinster National, and you get a bit of confidence out of that. You're riding for Gavin Cromwell. He still has a claim, which means that he's a young jockey who gets a few pounds off in the weights. But he gave final orders, a very good front running ride to win the cross country chase. And his brother Barry Stone won a race here last year at the festival. So Connor was pretty chill now, to be honest, about his first festival win, but he's obviously thrilled as well. Let's hear from him now.
Conor Stone Walsh, you've had your first Cheltenham winner today. I'd say it's one of the best days of your racing career.
Yeah, this definitely tops everything off. Brilliant, and can't thank everyone enough for getting me here.
The horse is called Final Orders, and what were you thinking in the morning when you saw it's a dry day, he likes good ground, and he won here at the track before?
Yeah, I was confident of a big run, not saying he was going to win now, but we were hoping he'd run a cracker, and to be fair, when we jumped off and went to gallop over the first couple, he was comfortable. He travelled and jumped everywhere and picked up going to the last and kept going the whole way to the line, yeah.
When did you know you had it in the bag?
I wasn't looking around. Just when I passed the line, that's when I knew.
How was that feeling? Can you describe it?
Not really, no. It's just unbelievable. Kind of a bit of a blur, to be honest.
You're riding for Gavin Cromwell. You had the Lovely Man at the Leinster National the weekend. So Gavin's horses are coming into form, and does that give you confidence when you have a big winner back in Ireland the weekend before Cheltenham?
Yeah, it definitely did. It was probably a bit quiet going up to that. So it was massive to get one on Sunday, and even better to get one today.
You're a Wexford man?
Yeah, I am, yeah.
So how was your journey? I know you worked with Joseph O'Brien, didn't you, as a teenager? You went to Joseph's?
Yeah, started off pony racing and riding out for my uncle Benny, Pine Pointers. And then I went to Joseph's and rode on the flat there for a year and a half. And then I just got too big, and the weight became a struggle. So I moved to Gavin then. And it just went from strength to strength since then, really.
I'm sure you grew up, Connor, watching Davy Russell, Ruby Walsh, Barry Geraghty, Paul Carberry, and this is what it's all about, that you're here now. You must be pinching yourself in a way.
Oh yeah, it's massive. For growing up, pulling sickies from school to go watch Cheltenham, so that was it really. I only ever wanted to be here.
And Barry, your brother won last year at the festival, so you've been in touch with the folks yet?
Yeah, I was talking to him, but my phone is kind of broken at the minute with the notifications, so I'll get on to them later.
Yeah, cool as a cucumber there. John, remind us about the Racing Pod Club, everything you got going on this week. Another successful day.
It was a crossbar day, to be honest.
Was it okay?
50 to 1 second. Sorry?
Yeah, Franciscan Rock, no?
Franciscan Rock 50-1, yeah, returned in the ring second. And the Conor Stone Walsh actually rode another horse that was third for us, Break My Soul. He was a 20-1 shot. So yeah, a bit of a crossbar day. But yeah, the Racing Pod Club, we're sending off our charity bets and exclusive pod content in the future. And obviously there'll be chances to win tickets as well to race days with William Hill. But the Racing Pod Club, if you want to sign up to get these nuggets and goodies into your inbox on email for free, you can go to offtheball.com/racingpodclub. Definitely worth getting involved. Johnny Ward's nap was Madgebur today, and Tom Malone's was Stumptown. So my nap also lost. So it wasn't as good as yesterday with the naps. In terms of the standings now, Owen, after halfway, it's Ireland 8, England 6. They had a 66-1 winner for Venetia Williams, Martator, who won by a nose from Jazzy Matty, an Irish-trained horse in the Grand Annual Chase. And Jingo Blue won for Nicky Henderson, his third win of the week in the MGM hurdle. So that's what we're looking at in terms of the first 2 days of Cheltenham. In terms of tomorrow then, the big two races, the Ryanair Chase, which Factofile, who won at Leopardstown last time out, is the odds-on favourite for Woody Mullins. And then you have the Stairs hurdle over 3 miles, Cabral du Matin, attracting a lot of support for the Skeltons here in England. But yeah, another 7 races to go tomorrow, and hopefully we want controversy, but we kind of want the right kind of controversy on, if that makes any sense.
No, it absolutely does. There's a line to be straddled there. John, great stuff today. Thanks, Willie, for joining us.
Thanks, Owen. Speak to you soon.
John Duggan there on the line. We'll take a quick break.
The Racing Pod
on Off the Ball
with William Hill. 18 plus. See gamblingcare.ie.